Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Real Vision Crypto Daily Briefing. Here is why you should tune into today's show. What is up with Grayscale? And do you remember Three Arrows Capital? We'll bring you the latest on those two important stories. Plus, we'll be joined live by the CEO of Dapp Radar to discuss the latest trends in gaming, the metaverse, and Web3. I'm Jeremy Barlow. Luke Franks is with me. Welcome to the show, Luke. This is your first time. Maybe you can just quickly introduce yourself, give our viewers a little bit of your backstory.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be here. So my name is Luke Franks. So my background is as a broadcaster, TV presenter here in the UK for the last kind of 10, 11 years. I've had a crypto journey over that time. I got into Bitcoin around 2017. Generally, my broadcast work was with a younger audience, so with kind of teens and Gen Z. And over that time, I sort of saw their habits change from watching TV to moving online and into virtual worlds while seeing blockchain get adopted. And saw those trends colliding with NFTs into the metaverse. And I do podcasts around that stuff now as well. So that's my journey and pleasure to be here.
That's awesome, man. Thank you for coming on with us today. Before we get into our top stories, if you are watching us on the Real Vision website, thank you. If you have not signed up there yet, check it out at realvision.com/crypto. We have a ton of crypto and macro content for you. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Hit that notification bell so you never miss when we go live. Let's start the show by jumping into some of the latest price action. No surprises today. Stability is the name of the game. Bitcoin down slightly on a 24-hour basis, trading around $16,800. This is virtually unchanged from a week ago. Luke, what's going on the Ethereum front?
Yeah, so Ethereum, a bit of movement, a little bit down. Ether is down more in percentage terms than Bitcoin. That's often not surprising. It's lost about 2% in the past 24 hours and roughly as much in a week. Ether is currently changing hands at just over $1,200.
Thank you for that, Luke. One other coin we're looking at right now is ApeCoin. It is down 5% on a 24-hour basis to $3.90 after surging to more than $4.20. Lots of volatility there as ApeCoin holders prepare for the launch of staking rewards. Decrypt reports that this will be live on Monday of next week. The official staking contract has already taken in nearly $32 million worth of Ape in one day. Let's dive in now to our top stories. There's an important update to a story we've been following closely on the show. Grayscale Investments is a digital assets manager and subsidiary of the Digital Currency Group. On Monday, we talked about the troubles at another DCG subsidiary, crypto broker and lender Genesis. Check out that episode if you haven't already. Genesis has been having financial trouble. The company halted withdrawals last month, but Grayscale is not without its own problems. Luke, what's the latest on that?
Yes, so Firtree Capital Management has sued Grayscale over, quote, potential mismanagement and conflicts of interest. According to a complaint filed on Tuesday in Delaware Chancery Court, Grayscale issued many shares in the past few years and didn't redeem any of them. The complaint alleges that that's part of the reason why the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust closed at a 43% discount on Monday. That means shares in the trust are severely undervalued compared to the value of the assets it holds. Bloomberg sources say Firtree wants Grayscale to close the gap by resuming redemptions and lowering the fees.
That's very interesting. Give us some context here. Why is this such a big deal?
Yeah, it is a big deal because Grayscale run the biggest Bitcoin fund. So their GBTC product is massive. It has $10.7 billion under management. If you divide that by the current price of Bitcoin, it gives you more than 600,000 Bitcoins. CNBC reported in May that Grayscale and its parent, DCG, own over 3% of the world's Bitcoin. So any issues at Grayscale are bound to worry crypto investors. A bit more bad news, unfortunately, as if we haven't had enough recently.
Yeah, I was going to say, as if crypto investors don't have enough to worry about these days.
Yeah.
Another story we've been focusing on lately is obviously the FTX fallout. Earlier in the year, we had a few other notable crypto blowouts. One of them was hedge fund Three Arrows Capital. Luke, what's the latest on 3AC?
Yeah, I promise we'll get some positive news in just a second, but strap yourselves in for this one. So a federal judge has authorized subpoenas for 3AC, Three Arrows Capital co-founders, Sue Zhu and Kyle Davies. This gives liquidators the ability to force them to turn over any documents and records relating to 3AC property or finances. That includes seed phrases and private keys as well. So the former Three Arrows leaders will have 14 days to comply, and several other people have been named as discovery targets. So there we go.
One thing you never want to be named is a discovery target.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest. So another question I have, and we've seen Suzu and Kyle Davies kind of pop back up on Twitter recently. Do we have any idea of where they are right now?
Well, yeah, for a while after 3AC filed bankruptcy on July the 1st, they kept a pretty low profile. But as you say, since FTX collapse, they've resurfaced on social media where this is all playing out. And the Block reports that it's currently believed Zhu is in Dubai whilst Davies is in Bali. Yeah, so I guess nice for some, but also probably less nice in this scenario.
Yeah, I've been to Bali before. Nice place. Not a bad spot to hang out.
Well, yeah.
So as you mentioned, we want to bring in some good news today. Let's get straight to our guest. Skirmantas Yanuskas is the CEO of DApp Radar, a decentralized app store for tracking and trading all things DeFi, NFT, and gaming related. Welcome to the show, Skirmantas.
Hello, good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Take it away, Luke.
Yeah, thanks, Skirmantas. Good to have you on the show. So we'll dive into DApp Radar in just a second, but I guess it'd be good to get your kind of just broad view of the markets at the moment. How are you feeling about everything? How is the sentiment from your corner?
Yeah, in general, you know, if we look at just crypto, if you forget the global market, just the crypto one. So, you know, we've been through that several times already. So we are, I'd say, not too worried about this. It was in 2018, then again and again and again. But obviously, adding the global recession on top of it, the way I say, you know, we hope for the best but prepare for the worst. That's the market conditions right now.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to talk about some gaming stuff in a second, because it's interesting, even in these downturns, that, you know, people who are playing games and blockchain games especially may be less affected by this stuff, because people play games, you know, throughout any market condition. So we'll come on to that in a second. But for anyone who doesn't know, maybe you could just tell us about DApp Radar. Few people will be familiar, well, quite a few. You've got a lot of users. It's a tool that I use to track in my portfolio daily, but there's a lot that you do at DApp Radar, a lot that it covers. So maybe you could just tell us all about it and what DApp Radar is.
Yeah, I'll let me start quickly from the kind of prehistory of DApp Radar. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was back of 2017, I think, when CryptoKitties and you know, those OGs, now they will know what I'm talking about. Probably many people don't know CryptoKitties anymore. But when CryptoKitties actually exploded, that was November or December of 2017, and then finally crypto got my attention, like real attention. I knew about it before, but it was, I was on the side of those probably 99% of people, you know, crypto is a scam, you know, I don't know what's going on there, I don't understand it. And then when I looked at CryptoKitties and said, okay, as a software engineer, let me try to dig into these smart contracts and what they are, you know, try to understand it. Then I got immediately hooked. Like, that was, so thank you, CryptoKitties, for getting me into crypto. And thanks, my co-founder, for pinging me for 5 years to get there. It took me a while. But, you know, that was the first step into crypto. And then 2 months later, so that was 2018 February, we just built DApp Radar over the weekend. You know, as we realized, all the data on the blockchain is public. Hey, you know, there is just a catalog of dApps out there. There is nothing, you know, no way to track those dApps, no way to know how many users there are, how many people are playing these dApps or using these dApps, how much money there is involved, how many transactions they're making, and so on. So, you know, we just did it over the weekend, launched the first version, got lots of feedback, lots of positive attention, and we kept going. And where we stand now, you know, we position ourselves as the world's dApp store, and we're building the world's dApp store. The community-owned world's dApp store, powered by millions and used by billions. That's how we see the future, and that's how we see the future of Web3 as well. The difference, you know, if we talk about app stores and app stores, you know, in Web3, the discovery of dApps is pretty different. You're not just looking at some nice images, you know, like in app stores and decide which game to play or which app to use. But instead, you really need to look into lots of data, like whether the token prices are, you know, going up and down, whether there is somebody using those dApps, whether these numbers are going up and down. So there is quite a bit of data you want to look at, and you know where to get that data. If it's all scattered around, it's going to be very difficult to do dApp discovery. And for users, it's going to be hard to, you know, find those dApps. For dApps, it's going to be hard to present themselves in a very nice way. So what we do, you know, we consolidate all this information, and we want to present it all to the user. So yes, on one side, you still have the nice images that attract your kind of visual attention, but then you dig deeper, you understand whether it's worth getting into this dApp, whether someone is playing already or using this dApp. So this is, you know, how we think about it. Another very important point there is about the, I really want to mention the community-owned part, because that's one of the things where, you know, 1 year ago, we launched Raider Token. And that was done with the solely with the purpose of building this ecosystem of contributions. So we meant that Raider is meant to be owned by community and to get contributions from community. So it's no longer, you know, just one company representing the whole app store, building the whole app store. We don't want to be like Apple or Google in this case, you know, Apple asking 30% on gas fees. What is this, you know? I don't think we all agree with that here. So Dapp Raider will be powered by millions of people worldwide, you know, by allowing anyone to contribute and earn this way.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And I love that Apple story, because trying to claim 30% on gas fees doesn't really make sense as a concept if you kind of understand the tech here. But maybe you could talk to us a bit more about dApps specifically. What do you mean there? Games come as part of that, but decentralized apps can be lots of different things. So maybe you could give us some examples of what dApps you index and what they do.
Right. And that's a very good question, because often we hear dApps out there, you know, and we at Dapp Raider, we have a different understanding of what a dApp is versus the kind of the general crypto audience. You know, for us, a dApp is something that has smart contracts behind it. You know, that has something that it's running actually on the blockchain. It depends on it and it enjoys the benefits of it. You know, so if you think about any wallet out there, like MetaMask and you know, Phantom, whatever kind of wallets there are, those we don't really consider dApps. You know, these are tools or services helping you to access dApps, but they're not dApps. They're not decentralized on their own. You know, so we're talking about decentralized applications. So I can give you a few examples of like true dApps. Thinking of games like DeFi Kingdom, for example. You know, that's a game running completely on the blockchain. Well, the front end is sort of centralized still, you know, but anyone can run the front end. The point is that the back end, the whole logic in the gameplay is on the back end, and you have tokens there, so it's kind of in-game currency. You have the whole mechanic in there, and sort of no one can take it away from you. Well, if you just, you know, you say you're a dApp, but by simply turning off your servers, you're no longer existing. Well, you're not really a dApp, are you? So this is, you know, on a very sort of simple terms, this is where we put the line. It needs to have smart contracts. It needs to be running on the blockchain, actually.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick pause and hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Yeah, cool. Okay, yeah, that's a great explanation. And yeah, DappRadar is brilliant. I'd encourage people to check it out. You can see loads of indexing tools. It's a good place to go to get sentiment of what's going on. You cover NFTs, obviously, on there as well, the top collections, you know, over the last 730 days and so on. Let's dive into gaming specifically, because there is a bigger conversation here, and there's some tension between traditional gamers and the gaming industry, which is obviously huge, but, you know, bigger than the music and film industry put together in terms of kind of, you know, market cap and the money that's generated each year. But there is this sort of tension for traditional gamers, and I know you have a gaming background, who maybe don't fully understand or misunderstand what NFTs can bring. I think a lot of gamers think that this feels like a way of gaming studios to try and get more money out of players after they've bought the title. But the argument from the other side, from the blockchain side, is actually that gamers spend a lot of time in these games, unlocking things, leveling up and earning things, and actually in the traditional model don't own any of their assets. With the blockchain model, you can own your assets and trade them and, you know, get paid for your time. So yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, and yeah, what's kind of the sentiment now between traditional gamers and this new blockchain gaming space?
Yeah, I think we saw it very clearly when Discord wanted to introduce NFTs, and all the gamers suddenly, to my surprise at that point in time, I was really surprised, like, what is it, guys? You know, I'm gaming a lot. You're gaming a lot. We have a lot in common. I'm okay with this. I'm super excited about this, and you're hating this. Something doesn't connect. And then, you know, my thinking behind it is probably, I don't know the actual reasons and, you know, the real reasons behind how they're thinking. But, you know, if we're talking about pay to play or pay to win games, well, more like pay to win, if you put the assets, you know, that that are NFTs, and you ask somebody to buy NFTs in order to, well, to win, obviously I'm against that, and then I'm not in it, you know. But if we're talking about skins, some digital sort of costumes and all the cosmetic things, I don't see a reason why anyone in gaming would be against it. You know, we already have this happening in Steam Marketplace. We already have it happening in CSGO. Like, it doesn't help you to win at all. Like, there is nothing that can help you win there, but there is a massive economy. Like, you know, Wax blockchain was actually kind of the sequence of OP skins. I might be wrong with some details, but, you know, OP skins were there trading CSGO skins. And then Wax blockchain appeared out of that, and they understand the value of it, and it's clear where they're going, you know. So if it's just cosmetics, the point is, it doesn't help you to win. It doesn't help anybody to win. You can have as deep pockets as you want, but in general, it's easier for you to obtain any assets that you want in game if they're cosmetic, if they're on the blockchain, and you don't necessarily need to buy them. So where is the problem, you know? But ultimately, one thing that I really like about having digital assets as NFTs or any other form that's, you know, maybe we will invent something new rather than NFTs, but it's about anything that you accumulated in game, any assets that you got. You could be playing for 5, 7, 10 years the game. That happens, CSGO, Fortnite, and the rest. You know, either you're trading those things on black market if it's possible, or you're not doing it at all because it's not possible, like on Fortnite. So what happens then? You know, you're starting to play a game when you're, I don't know, 10 or 12 years old. You finish playing it maybe when you're 20. What did you get from that? Yeah, probably some soft skills, you know, communicating with your guild, with your clan, friends, you know, made some friends, and that's it. But when it comes to real life, you know, then you quit the game and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to college. Hey, Dad, give me some money. You know, I didn't make anything by playing this game. But I can see a future very well, this changing drastically. And it happens with some people because, you know, if you play CSGO for a long time and if you use black market, well, you can make quite a bit of money as well. So it is happening, but it's just happening in black market and nobody talks about it. But if it was happening in a free market, then yeah, you still play for 5, 7, 10 years. And after that, everything you have, you can just, you know, sell it and you buy a house, you go to college, or, you know, just pay for rent, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's opening up this kind of disruption that gaming and playing games can be a form of income, which sounds strange to probably previous generations as well. But there's also these conversations about getting the economics right, and it not being pay to win, but maybe earning and your time being spent in there is how you kind of gain these NFTs, and then you can make some money from them if you decide to stop playing the game. I always think it's interesting that a lot of people would probably naively guess that gamers are very much of a younger age, but actually I think the average age for a gamer is around 35. So this is kind of very relevant for all ages, although the younger ages are kind of growing up natively owning digital assets in places like Roblox and Fortnite. But my question to you is, can you give us any kind of metrics or any idea of how much blockchain games are being adopted, what kinds of games we're seeing at the minute, and are we going to hit a moment where we see some AAA games that are blockchain games and get people very excited regardless of the technology? They just want to play the game because it's fun.
Yeah, it is pretty difficult at the moment to know the amount of people actually playing those blockchain games. We have the numbers on chain, but there is also a big part that is happening off chain. Even if we take Axie Infinity as example, which is pretty much a blockchain game and everybody knows that, they have millions of people playing Axie, or had at least, but just a portion of that was actually happening on chain, because the whole gameplay that is just happening on kind of through their servers, and only the assets like the ownership and some gameplay mechanics are only those happening on chain. So that makes it pretty difficult to at this point in time to measure the actual scale of blockchain gaming and the users. But that's something we're working on, and I'm sure we'll get to a point where we will have a lot of things happening off chain, like AAA games. I'm talking about scale of Fortnite, CSGO, and Call of Duty, and similar ones. We'll begin with probably them having items on the blockchain. So it's not going to be the gameplay on the blockchain. I don't know when that's going to happen, if ever. But we'll certainly have assets on the blockchain that allows, enables the free market to anybody. And what we have there, it's not the amount of users playing the game that we are going to be measuring them. But it's going to be more about how many of them are actually trading assets, how many of them are exchanging different items. And that's something we can measure on chain. And that's something that is on one side, yes, you can manipulate that in a way of, I'm creating 10 different accounts and trading 10 different skins. But it's if we're going to the natural accrual of the assets and so on, it's pretty hard to manipulate that. And we will know the scale of, how many people are actually trading those assets, and how healthy the economy is. And that's where we get to what I was talking about, about that trader, about the world's app store. That's how we see it. Now think about, there is a game, whatever, the same Fortnite, if suddenly they had NFTs. I'm as a gamer, I know about Fortnite, I'm playing it, super cool. And then I figure out, because it's not obvious, but then I figure out, okay, so those assets that I have in game, they're actually on the blockchain. So I can do something with them. Then I Google Fortnite, and I find, okay, so there is Fortnite, there is DappRaider, kind of Fortnite's page on DappRaider. I click on it and I see, oh wow, so I can see my assets. I can see how these assets kind of changed in value over time. I can see whether the value is growing up, or going down. All this information will give me an insight of, whether it makes sense for me to keep playing, whether I should look for something else. And that will be a very nice discovery for users, because they will no longer need to rely on whatever the App Store recommends me. And also one very important point, which I think CSGO and Steam Marketplace brought to a lot of people, especially a lot of teenagers, is the grasp of economics. And I'm really excited to see that when kind of blockchain games really picks up. When you're 12, 13, 14 years old, and you are dealing with assets that sort of have real money value, you start understanding how economy works. It's no longer just, you being at school taught, you need to count your money, you need to save your money and these kind of things, but you actually, touch this money and you can start making decisions on that. Again, I'm not encouraging that. I'm not saying, that needs to have rules, that needs to be in a way regulated and so on, but it's just that the understanding of it, I got a lot of that through playing games. And I think that's a fascinating opportunity.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I saw an amazing article recently around Minecraft craft, which really they were using in schools for kids to visualize and explore how to build kind of flood barriers and things like that, like running simulations in these worlds to learn for educational things. So yeah, what you talk about there is interesting. You also mentioned about measuring the statistics in these worlds, and in the centralized worlds we've got some, you know, amazing facts like the evidence of moving from gaming to more metaverse kind of open social worlds, and the stats are phenomenal. You know, Roblox around 40 to 50 million daily active users. They have 32 million experiences on their platform. 60,000 are published daily. These kind of mini games that are user generated, that users build. Their most popular experience now, an experience called Adopt Me, has been visited over 30 billion times, which is crazy when you think the most watched video on YouTube has been watched 11 billion times. So this next generation are really growing up in these virtual worlds. Fortnite, you know, similarly, 30 million daily active users as well. Meta Horizons, some lower reports from their targets of kind of 500,000 users per month. I think it was Wall Street Journal reported they had about 200,000, so they're a little bit off their targets. There was also an interesting DappRadar report around blockchain-based worlds and their low number of users, especially when some of these worlds have billion-dollar valuations. I think it was reported that Decentraland had 38 active users in the past 24 hours, whilst the Sandbox had 522 active users. Now, that was an interesting report, but some of the things you mentioned is about measuring these statistics, right? Because there's a lot of people who visit these worlds as guests and wouldn't necessarily register a transaction on the blockchain, so they wouldn't be necessarily counted in a measure of how many players there are there. I think Decentraland say they have about 6,100 per month, so that's kind of interesting. There's nuances around how long they spend there as well. It's kind of hard to measure, and the Sandbox have been rolling out their sort of alpha season, so we've seen just recently that alpha season 3, where they kind of open up their world to lots of experiences, lots of brands have experiences there. They said over that time, Sebastian Borgia, COO, 39,000 daily users, about 4.1 million total wallets registered, up from 2 million from the previous alpha season 2, and 1.6 million hours played. So interesting stats and like a massive difference in measuring these things. So how do you kind of see that, and are we developing the tools to measure these things accurately still?
Yeah, so here, you know, what happened there is you coded up right there, we take one metric, meaning unique active wallets, which is exactly saying what's happening on the blockchain, and you're kind of painting it as the whole picture. So this is where sort of it went wrong with the story, let's say. And then we, you know, we were all clarifying it together with Decentraland and Sandbox and so on. This basically shows how complex the kind of blockchain world is still to the mass media and to the mass audiences, and that we need to work a lot on that together. And the point is, there are two different types of data mainly. One is what's happening on-chain, what's happening on the blockchain. And the other part is what is not happening on the blockchain, but is still relevant. So in that case, as you mentioned, if you look at Sandbox or Decentraland or Somnium Space or, you know, any other sort of metaverse, if you're a guest, as I said, or if you're just exploring the world without making any transaction, without interacting with the blockchain, you're just, it's like you would be playing Fortnite. You know, you're not connecting, you're not connected to the blockchain really, you're not interacting with it. You might be retrieving some data from there, but that's where it ends. You know, there is, you leave no track on the blockchain, we can put it this way. And if you don't leave any track on the blockchain, you're not registered as a user, you know, as a unique active wallet on that trader. So this is ultimately where how it works. Now, you know, having said that, it's still those 6,000 users or no, whatever the number is, that is still very relevant, you know, because I want to know how many people are actually leaving track on the blockchain and how many people are just, you know, looking at that, still using the data, but they're not actively kind of contributing there. So that's something we certainly have in mind. And in the future, our aim is to merge those two. And as a user, you know, you can see, okay, so there is maybe 100 people every day doing something, leaving track on the blockchain, which would mean, you know, trading assets, you know, doing some, I don't know, asset crafting, breeding, whatever it is. But then there is 5,000, 10,000 people who want to just, you know, look at what you built. And those are off-chain. Those are not, maybe they don't even have a wallet. They don't even know what the blockchain is, but they're using it. At some point, they might get onboarded and become a part of that 100 and, you know, help it grow to 1,000 and then 10,000, then a million and so on. So this is the very brief sort of explanation, you know, of what happened there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to hear, isn't it? And in this early adopter phase, yeah, we're still kind of trying to measure all these metrics in different ways on and off chain. So it's good to have that kind of knowledge and understanding when we see these numbers as well. And, you know, a lot of people would say that in terms of the broader adoption of blockchain, you know, started obviously with Bitcoin and then more financial rails, and then NFTs grabbed people's attentions because it was visual, and, you know, images helps it kind of, I guess, be more accessible. And games, there's such a huge industry there already that once people learn and get educated and the tools are built out, that might be the next big onboarder for people to blockchain, whether they know that's happening or not. But yeah, I guess kind of my last question to you is what are you looking forward to next? What's coming for Dapp Radar? And then is there any kind of games or dApps that you're particularly excited about at the moment?
Yeah, for Dapp Radar, I mean, we're a huge believer in games in general. You know, I think for the next 1 to 3 years, we'll see crazy stuff happening in the games and blockchain industry. And I think we'll see something, again, you know, what happened in 2021, it exploded so fast. You know, we were all looking behind it. Okay, we knew it's coming, but at this pace, come on. So I think, you know, that's what we are going to see with games as well. And we're preparing for this because in order to provide the proper discovery, to allow users to discover these games and these dApps, we need to be ready. And that requires a lot of resources, that requires a lot of hands, in a way, you know, to do custom metrics, to do custom KPIs about every single game to reflect the way they work. And for that, we have a thing that we call contribute to earn. So you heard about play to earn, this is contribute to earn. It's about allowing anybody from outside to contribute, and, you know, whatever it is, they could be coding, could be writing good articles, building tools, and then do different kind of things for Dapp Radar and for dApps. And that's something we're working on. And, you know, this was done in order to have a successful dApp store, because we don't want to keep the power in our hands. We want to give it away to community, which means, well, we also don't need to do all the work, because then that can be biased. So let's allow anybody to contribute, and this way they get rewarded. Now, one funny thing for the end, before we end, I was recently playing with ChatGPT, you know, the AI chat, and I asked it to come up with a poem about that predator. I'm not going to quote it all, but just two lines of that. And those were, with contribute to earn in full effect, app stores are no longer a subject. So I don't know. It's not me, it's ChatGPT saying, but, you know, the Predator is an evolution of app stores, and that's where we're going. And I think games will be the vertical, the category of dApps that will help us and the rest of the world, especially gamers who are against NFTs now, understand how big this is and how good it is for them, not just for those crypto OGs.
Yeah, that is an amazing way to end this part of the interview, using artificial intelligence chatbot GPT-3. It's smarter than all of us, so probably knows, I would guess. But yeah, Scamantis, thanks so much for doing that chat. That was awesome. Appreciate you coming on. And yeah, if you will hang around, we're going to dive into a story which is definitely relevant about Animoca Brand. So Jeremy, over to you.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take another quick break and hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back to the Real Vision Crypto Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, a fascinating conversation between the two of you. I've been on the edge of my seat. That's really, really good stuff. I'm super excited about Web3 gaming. We're going to stay with the metaverse here, but we're going to move to music. We recently reported that Animoca Brands, the metaverse gaming company behind Sandbox, is launching a $2 billion fund, and it looks like they're already putting their money where their mouth is. Animoca is acquiring a majority stake in Pixelnix, which is a music metaverse gaming platform. Animoca was an early investor in Pixelnix, which had been founded by musicians deadmau5 and Richie Houghton. The news comes a year after Animoca struck a deal with Warner Music Group to create the first music-themed world within the same sandbox gaming metaverse. Luke, want to get yours and Scramantis' thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Animoca Brands, obviously a huge player in this space, amazing history, been here for a long time, have lived through all of these cycles and continue to make big moves. And music specifically, in the Web3 context, they are an industry that's moving quickly. You mentioned Warner Music having their plot in the sandbox and trying to create these virtual experiences there. And, you know, we've seen some evidence of that, as I say, again, in these centralized virtual worlds, places like Fortnite, where they've done virtual gigs. So the famous one is Travis Scott did a gig in Fortnite, so as an avatar, and people attended as avatars and they bought skins to do that. It reportedly netted about $20 million in total, which was the equivalent of him doing 10 back-to-back physical arena shows. So he was able to do that show once and then kind of scale it to the world. So virtual touring and selling digital merch alongside that is a fascinating move. For music, we've also seen Probably Not a Label is another project. Warner, I think, are involved with that, kind of to create a decentralized music label. Even MTV at the recent Video Music Awards added a category, the Best Metaverse Performance category. So they now have a virtual gigs type award, and Blackpink, the K-pop band, won that this year. So lots going on in this space. So yeah, really interesting. And Scamantis, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add around the music side of stuff.
Yeah, I think, we spoke a lot about gaming, but music is something I think that matches very well with metaverse. And I can actually prove that with yet another quick story. So 1 year ago, a bit more than 1 year ago, actually, I think before we launched our token, we did an announcement in Somnium Space, kind of the metaverse VR one. I was on stage in full VR, and we had before the announcement, we had a live musician doing, acoustic sort of music and singing there for all the people who were on stage there as well. And then after my speech there, we also had a kind of a club music. We had a DJ on stage. So it's quite insane, to, let's say, you put on VR gear, you go there, you hang around with people that you know and don't know. You hear people actually singing and you can see them performing. It's not reality, right? But that's pretty close. And anytime I see something's happening with the metaverse, I'm just like, okay, yes, nice. One step closer. We're getting there. So super excited about this.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially the VR side of stuff, because it's a technology that's been around for a long time. It's kind of been permanently in a bear market until potentially recently, and Meta Quest 2, that headset, the hardware, outsold Xbox, I think, for the first time last year. So we're starting to see something kind of move with VR, and yeah, these immersive music experiences feel like a good fit for that. There's another one called Red Pill VR, where they are using or about to use cloud computing, so you'll be able to put your headset on, but you won't necessarily need a really powerful computer to experience an amazing environment built on Unreal Engine, which is used for films and lots of video games, and experience this kind of live environment with live DJs as avatars. So that feels like a natural kind of direction for this all to go in, which is interesting for sure. But yeah, Jeremy, I know we're going to move on, and maybe we've got some questions from the Real Vision community as well.
We do. Just before I get into that, just this conversation of virtual gigs kind of came to mind. My girlfriend works for a large tech company, and they had their Christmas party in the metaverse last year because they are a global company. And as the headline act for their Christmas party, they had Macklemore come on stage and do a set virtually, which, that was my first kind of exposure to these virtual gigs. And I was like, whoa, that is like the potential of this is so massive. And it was really, really cool to see. And I'm just incredibly curious to see how this continues to evolve. But as you said, we have some viewer questions. The first one, we've obviously talked about the upside of Web3 gaming and the potential there. But one of our viewers asked, what are the potential downsides of putting AAA games or some of its assets on the blockchain for the biggest gaming developers?
Yeah, interesting one. Scamantis, maybe your best place to answer that, and I can jump in with some thoughts after.
Yeah, I think the downside and the risk is if they do that without changing their business model at all. So you know, if you just come take existing business model, just put it, you know, on the blockchain, well, that's not going to work. You know, if Fortnite suddenly says, look, these assets are going to be NFTs, so then everybody buys them and starts trading. You know, what's in it for Fortnite? So it needs to change a bit. You know, they need to add royalties. They need to understand how it changes the whole economy for them. So I think that that's also something that either, you know, the game developers are sort of worried about, you know, because you can't just put it on there and then have it running. You got to think of a new business model. At the same point in time, I don't think there are currently probably the biggest downside is that you will see what Discord saw. You know, you announced that, oh, we're going to be doing NFTs, and suddenly everyone is turning against you. So maybe that could be one of the biggest risks out there as a game, big game company, to turn into NFTs. But hey, we're working in this industry. We'll get there. We know that.
Yeah, it'll take time, and there's a bit of education and a sentiment shift to go. But I guess another risk, is as with all crypto assets, making it really user friendly and security and keeping those assets safe, especially if it's with younger users. You know, and make sure they don't lose all their stuff that they've earned as well. I would guess as well. But yeah, Jeremy, I wonder if we've got some more questions.
Thank you for those answers, gentlemen. Ralph H on the Real Vision website is asking for Skrmantis. From what geographic regions are you seeing the most demand? Do games tend to be open architecture to the degree that this would be available on most games? And are traditional game developers keen to allow virtual assets to be sold back and forth?
I'm looking forward yet to see, you know, those AAA games and how these are going to play out. But what we saw with play-to-earn games, a lot of the traffic, a lot of the users out there are, from developing countries. Because that's where, you know, for example, I know there are huge communities in Philippines and Venezuela and similar countries where they literally changed, if not millions, then hundreds of thousands of people's lives this way. And so this was the first bit, the first wave, and I'm looking forward, you know, to see how it evolves.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, as well? And I think, like, what some game developers might not have quite understood yet is this idea of this kind of open system, right? So, to control all of your assets in your game at the moment, in games where you buy a title and everything's contained within your world, there is some amazing opportunities to be able to open that up and let anyone else who's a fan to create maybe a fan world where if you own a Sword and Mon game, you can kind of bring it outside of that into a new fan run world, or it can unlock another experience, and you kind of get the benefit of the scale of the internet by enabling content creators to kind of allow access from assets from your game into their world, and you expand that way, this big open network effect. So I guess, yeah, it might be interesting to watch that for sure. But yeah, I think we're heading towards the end, but Jeremy, I'll throw it back to you.
One last question. This is from Brad Smith on YouTube, and I'm not sure if either of you are familiar with this protocol called Veracity. If you have any thoughts on that tech from the guests, and a quick Google, I was looking at it. It says it is a protocol and product layer platform for esports and video entertainment, if either of you are familiar with Veracity.
It's something I'll need to dive into. The esports world is fascinating. I spend a bit of time watching stuff there, as they recently streamed some stuff inside Portals, a metaverse on Solana, which was really cool. But Veracity, I would need to do a bit more research on, but Skrmantis, don't know if you know anything on that.
Same here, Luke. We'll definitely take a look, because esports, blockchain, you know, gaming makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Brad, hold the line. We will get back to you on that. Thank you for asking that question. This has been another fascinating conversation today. Thank you to both Luke and Skrmantis for joining us. I've got some key takeaways. We will jump over to the gentlemen and get their key takeaways. But as we continue to follow stories that are breaking out of the crypto space, of course, Digital Currency Group and Grayscale continue to come under fire, with Grayscale being sued by Firtree Capital Management, with Firtree wanting Grayscale to close the gap, so to speak, between their trust and the price of the underlying assets by resuming redemptions and lowering fees for their Grayscale Bitcoin trust. Also, we covered today, Three Arrows Capital founders Suzu and Kyle Davies have been subpoenaed by a federal judge, forcing them to turn over documents and records relating to Three Arrows Capital property and finances, and giving them 14 days to comply. Lastly, we spoke about Animoca Brands continuing to make waves in the metaverse with their recent investment in music metaverse gaming platform Pixelnix. Gentlemen, I want to jump over to you for your key takeaways. Let's start first with Skrimantis.
Yeah, I think we talked a lot about gaming and metaverse, and I'm really happy we did this way because personally, I think that's where it goes. And I heard that question quite a few times. It's like, who wants to be on the metaverse? You know, they ask. And you know what I see is those millions of people of, you know, teenagers and so on playing Roblox daily or similar games. They already are on the metaverse. You know, they're just calling it a different name. And you add some other things on top, which is like asset ownership. You have the monetary system in there. You have the economy, trustlessness. And it's just, it's the same, but on steroids. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, I think you've said it really well there, but yeah, you know, we're in an early phase here, but a lot of evidence is there around, you know, as you say, kids growing up in Roblox and Fortnite being native with digital assets, gaming being such a huge industry when I think that education gets through, that people can kind of own their assets in this way. I wouldn't be surprised if that is the massive next onboarder into blockchain, and hopefully probably people won't know about, you know, that blockchain is necessarily the tech underneath it. It's going to be a smooth experience and people will play the games because they're fun. And yeah, that's where a next major wave might come from. So we will see.
Yes, we will. And for me personally, I'm excited about Web3 gaming because if I can tell my girlfriend that I'm getting paid to do so, I might be allowed to play more games. So that's what I'm looking forward to. But that's everything from us today. I want to thank you, Skrimantis, for joining us. Thank you to Luke for hosting. I think we will definitely be bringing both of you back on in the near term. Pleasure doing the show with you.
Thank you.
Likewise. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having us both. Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. That's it for today. Once again, do not forget to subscribe to Real Vision Crypto on both the Real Vision platform as well as on YouTube. Once again, smash everything, hit that like bell, subscribe, the notification bell as well, so you don't miss us when we go live. Join us again tomorrow. We will have Sergey Nazarov from Chainlink and Sydney Powell of Maple Finance live on the show. That will be at noon Eastern Time, 5 p.m. in London, live on the Real Vision Crypto Daily Briefing.